To my immediate right is Mary Holmes, and she has a couple of hats that I want to share with you today. She is the president of Alpha Energy Consulting Group Limited, and she also is the relationship manager of Agribusiness Solutions Incorporated, and that's in Peoria. And the Alpha Energy is out of Augusta. And Mary, I'm just going to go ahead and throw it to you for an opening remark or two to see where you are.
That's a really good question. The only thing I've got to say is, Dan, thanks for taking at least 10 minutes of our time, because pretty much everybody's covered what Randall and I talked about saying today. So that being said, I'll put on my other hat, and I'll tell you what the markets are doing. Got the 10 o'clock update. Corn's down 12 cents. Beans are down 15. Wheat's down 17. Paul Cooley back there said that the president came out and said that all this ethanol is going to hurt the livestock industry. Duh. I knew that, and I don't even have to be the president. Anyway, that being said, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Dave had asked me to discuss some issues that I thought were important to the ethanol industry. I thought since I had driven 269 miles to get here, perhaps I'd have something to say, but it looks like most of it's been said. I will say this. What do you think? The ethanol industry is expanding. Anybody disagree with that? The question is it expanding too fast? You know, what do we really have going on? Is it possible to build an ethanol plant every 20 miles and have it be successful? I would argue no. Probably one of the biggest things that I see throughout the Midwest is everybody wants to build an ethanol plant in their backyard, but nobody really wants to cooperate very well to do it. So the ethanol industry is definitely expanding, but everything that's projected to get built will by no means get built. I'd like to ask all of you, how many of you are actually invested in the ethanol industry? Raise your hands. Very few of you passed that test. Every single producer, every single rural community leader is involved in ethanol today. 20% of the nation's corn crop is going to utilize ethanol. So whether you're personally invested in an ethanol facility or you're growing corn, you're invested. And as a producer, you really have to be able to manage your risk right now. Cash prints going up, input costs are going up, everything's going up. It really, now I'm putting my other hat on. It really behooves you to pay attention to what's going on. I thought I would be able to get a shot as I look through my notes and try to figure out what everybody has said or not said. I thought surely I could get a shot at the rural America, rural Illinois, rural Indiana, and what that means to it. Who would have thought Dan from Chicago could figure that out? You know, he even took that line. But that is so key. It is so important for us to realize how important this is for our economies, for our rural economies. We need to look at it as a regional effort. We need to work together, whatever it takes to get our economic development side involved in this and make this happen. Because so many of these projects are going to private placement, and there's very limited opportunity for those of us small folks to be able to actually participate in what I consider a very, very exciting opportunity. Risk management's key. I'm going to pass this over to Randall, but I'd like to say that, you know, I think this is probably the most exciting time I've seen in agriculture. I think we've got a lot of opportunities, and the next 10 years, whatever it takes, and I say we get ourselves organized and be able to keep some of that money in our pocket and not let the big boys have it all.
Thank you, Mary. And, of course, next to Mary is Randall Matheny. He is the treasurer of Lincoln Land Agri-Energy out of Palestine, Illinois. And, boy, it must be a lot of fun doing your job when prices are what they are.
Well, it's not too bad. I guess, you know, $4 corn's seems to scare a lot of people off, but, you know, if you make a commitment out here, get involved, there's still a profit to be made in the ethanol industry, even at $4 corn. Now, if oil, if you think it's going to go down to $50 a barrel, $40 a barrel, then buyer beware. But I think in the last probably, week, oil's broke the $60 barrier again, and I don't probably see it dropping back too much. I know our story down there where I am from, my farm, and the treasure is just just kind of a title, you know. I did get to write $1 million check, and I found out it wasn't any harder to write one of those than a $10 check. You just need more zeros.
But it's a lot more fun to cash.
It did clear the bank.
Well, let me stay with you, Randall, and put some numbers to what we've been talking about. Ethanol prices, I did a little research. Ethanol prices up until last year generally ran from about $1 to $1.80 per gallon. And last year, they ran up to $3.58 in June and have fallen since. And during June, for every bushel of corn purchased, you made $6.85 in profit, relatively speaking, for that ethanol, about a 346% return. Dan had a little bit higher number than that. Mine pencil is about 346. January ethanol price was 226, and the January numbers suggest that for every bushel of corn that was purchased, you make about $1.50 in profit, about a 41% return. And certainly a 41% return is still nothing not to write home about. It's a good number. And the question that I have for right now for you is, when you talk at your plant with the people that care about the numbers, at what number do they begin to express some concern relative to corn prices?
Well, we haven't really got into it that hard yet, because we use a lot of risk management down there. We have all our corn pretty much covered clear through May. Ethanol is contracted out in 6-month periods. You have your April to October, October to April periods. We're still filling contracts that is pretty lucrative to us. Prices had went down. They are bumping back. I think spot right now is around $2. $2 ethanol, $4 corn will still return a fairly nice profit. A year ago, it'd be 2 years ago, I'll back up on that, we was projecting $1.16 ethanol. That's the way we set our budget. It didn't materialize. It continued to ease on up. And, there's always a concern that you won't cash flow, but we have positioned ourselves. We've taken care of our debt. We're not going out and doing a lot of new creative things. We're going to play our cards to the vest, so to speak, for the next 12 months, see where everything shakes out, and go from there. But, we're just not going to go out and get wild and do crazy things, I guess.
Does $5 corn price out as a profit?
$5 corn will eat into the profit, yes.
But you're still at a profit. $5.15 corn, does that price out into a profit?
Pardon?
At what point does it no longer become profitable? What corn price do you think? At the moment, given what you know.
$5 corn will stop the profit.
$5 corn.
Yes.
I penciled $5.15, so we're in the neighborhood together.
But you got other variables out there. What's your distiller's grain going to be worth? What's your natural gas?
Exactly.
There's a lot of variables involved in that.
So $5 and $5.15 corn, somewhere in there. Then you begin to scratch your head and say, well, maybe not so profitable, Mary. What about relative to the run-up that we've been seeing, the astounding run-up that Dan said, plants going online, there are some wild estimates out there, as many as 200 plants on the drawing board we're seeing. Does higher corn prices damper enthusiasm for future growth of the industry? And if so, at what level?
We hope it does. I just checked the RFA website this morning in the hotel before I came over. And currently there are 114 ethanol facilities up and running that produce about 5.6 billion gallon of ethanol. 78 are under construction, 7 are in the expansion mode. So that will bring us to 11.8 billion gallon produced a year annually here by the end of, I believe, 07. So the question is, you can get on a variety of websites, you can pick up any newspaper, you can turn on the TV, it's on everybody's mind, everybody is talking about it, and there are a lot of ethanol projects out there. My entertainment seems to be when I walk on the treadmill in the morning that I read Renewable Energy Prospectus. And I'm not walking, obviously, near long enough or near far enough to get all this done. There are some really bad, poorly put together projects out there, and there are some really good ones. So, yes, I do see some slowdown, and I think that's not a bad thing.
Can you put some sort of definitiveness to that slowdown? Do you have a sense that you can give us some numbers, perhaps?
The short answer to that is no.
Okay. I just ask the questions. I don't answer them. The other interesting thing that was brought up by Dan was how ethanol primarily is a U.S. phenomenon, while biodiesel is a world phenomenon. And that brings to mind where biodiesel might be going, Mary, in the U.S., because certainly we don't have a lot of it yet here in this country. However, there are a number of plants on the drawing board. I think there's 3 or 4 in Illinois. We got one up and running now in Illinois. I was attracted to the statements that Keith Collins made last fall in his testimony before Congress about biodiesel and the fact that there isn't a huge profit margin. It's a thin margin to make it well work out. So I'm interested as you're going around and talking to people, what is the interest in the Eastern Corn Belt in biodiesel production?
I'm pretty excited about biodiesel. I sort of get kind of out there when I think about, you know, being sort of visionary and seeing what could happen in the industry. And I think a couple of things. If we ever get the corn fractionation figured out for the ethanol plants and figure out how to pull that corn oil off of the front or the back end of the ethanol facility, and we put up our little biodiesel plant beside that. But then the issue with the biodiesel is that it's limited feedstock. So if you're going to put up a facility and you're completely dependent on soybean oil, well, who has control over soybean oil? So some of the projects that are being a little bit more imaginative in their creation in terms of using the rendered fat out of the restaurant industry and some of those things, I think are going to be better long term. But you don't have to drive very far up and down the highways and byways. You meet a lot of semis, a lot of diesel trucks. I drive about 1,000 miles a week, and I would say that the biodiesel industry is probably just about to the place where ethanol was back in 1999 when Randall and I first started talking about it, and everybody said, boy, that's not a very good idea.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty optimistic about it, Dave.
What will it take to really for it to take off? I mean, there were several things that helped ethanol along the way. And I suppose the biggest one was MTBE, but there were other things. There were some governmental supports there. There are some governmental supports for biodiesel in place. I think they sunset in 2010, maybe. But I wonder, is that enough? What would you think that is needed to really see the biodiesel boom take off from an infrastructure perspective? And that might be governmental. It might be visionary, like Randall over here, saying, talking up the message. What needs to take place?
Part of the issue, I think, and I'm not really quite as knowledgeable about biodiesel as I need to be, but part of it is the quality issue, and that it's not uniform, and there's issues with it gelling and some of those things. So I think that's a lot of it, and I think that, you know, that'll eventually get worked out, and they'll pass more uniform standards that will help the biodiesel industry.
So quality issues have to be addressed. Other things?
Well, I think one of them is the manufacturing industry. You have one company come down and said that, we won't guarantee an engine if you use over X, and another, somebody else says, well, you can use this, and it goes back to what Mary said. I think it's a quality issue.
Cellulosic ethanol. Dan was talking about 4 years at least, 4 to 7 years away. Does this match up with your thinking too, 4 to 7 years away for cellulosic ethanol?
Actually, I think it's farther than that. I don't think the technology's out there yet. And I know we was at a meeting last summer, and one guy, that's all he could talk about was cellulose ethanol. And we happened to be over in Champaign County, and I asked for a show of hands if everybody wanted to sell their corn planters and buy hay balers, and I don't think anybody held their hand up, as I remember. Because there's be such a problem, this stuff has to be kept dry, and we have to have a 12-month supply of it, maybe in Brazil, maybe eventually here, but I think we're looking 10 years out plus.
Mary?
I'm always willing to admit when I'm wrong, you know, unlike a lot of females that you guys might know, but I am. I'm always...
I mention that today is my wife's birthday?
That being said, I really struggle with wrapping my arms around the whole cellulosic industry in terms of, you know, how are we really logistically going to make that happen? Part of myself argues with the other part of myself. So if we put up a facility every 20 miles, maybe we could make that work. Well, that's one thing. The logistics of transporting that stuff to me just seems pretty overwhelming. And then you stop and think about, and if I'll do Randall's thing, can I see a show of hands, how many of you producers out there think that you're going to convert and plant, say, 200 acres of switchgrass in? I'll give you 3 years to make up your mind.
That would be zero, Mary?
That would be zero, yeah, right. And then I think about the greenies and the CRP and all that stuff, and so... You know, but if I'm wrong, you know, I'll sit up here and tell you I was wrong.
I think one, and I don't myself know that much about the cellulose, but it takes a lot of acres, a lot of tonnage to make this. And somebody was telling it takes like, 25,000 acres to even be able to justify a plant. Or maybe, let me back up on that. I was thinking it was like 250,000 acres. It's a huge amount. And we take, down there where we're at, we're on the clay, and if we take all this stover or bean stubble or whatever, straw, we're going to definitely have some impact on their soil down there.
Pest problems, there's a lot of economic and environmental impacts when you begin to remove that stover. Here's some numbers for you to chew on. How many years, Mary, do you know, that did it take to get to 1 billion gallons of ethanol production? You know how many years it took?
A lot.
It took 13 years to go from zero to our first billion gallons of ethanol production in this country. Now, our president has said he would like to see 20 billion gallons of cellulosic production in 10 years.
Well, we're going to double it in a year, so does that help? We're going to double ethanol production in a year.
We're going to double it, but not cellulosic.
Right.
Now, so the question is, how do you get there? And this is where it becomes a little bit fuzzy, because certainly we're looking at a chicken and an egg problem. Investors are not investing in cellulosic plants because we don't have a good way of doing it yet. Certainly we don't have a cost-efficient way, and there's no supply. And then farmers are not going to be planting switchgrass or other energy crops because there's no market. Who blinks first? Who do you think blinks first? You have a sense? Who blinks first?
I have no idea myself.
See?
And I don't see farmers being willing to go. I mean, anybody's input costs rising lately? I don't see farmers going out there and being willing to strip all the nutrients off of their ground, bale the corn, and hope that somebody comes up with a facility to run it through.
I think Abengoa, and I don't know whether that's French, Spanish, or whoever, it's a foreign-owned company, they're going to open a small cellulose plant in York, Nebraska. Should be coming online this year, but it is very, very small. It's more or less a, I would almost call it a pilot plant.
Of course, that being said, I would also point out that, once again, back in 1999 when Randall and I got together with a group of farmers and agribusiness professionals and economic development folks over in Crawford County and decided that we were going to build an ethanol plant, most people thought that we were pretty foolish. So, who knows?
I think actually more than foolish.
Well, who's smiling now, Randall?
Well, most of the guys that didn't come to any of our meetings and stayed in the coffee shop are not smiling, I know that.
Now, another piece of this is that fact that ethanol has become politically a good thing.
Correct.
I don't suppose we have, over in Illinois, we have one member on the House Ag Committee, Timothy Johnson, the 15th Congressional District. He represents all of Illinois, in other words. We have one guy on the House Ag Committee. He is pro-ethanol, and you are not going to get him to say anything bad about ethanol. However, I wonder this. If it's true that livestock is eventually going to be hurt, and Dan said not yet, he's looking at the futures and seeing them up in the 80s and 90s, but if it's true that livestock will at some point be hurt, do you suppose maybe this year, maybe next year, that Mr. and Mrs., probably Mrs. more than Mr., Mrs. Middle America is going to go to their local Schnucks store or their Jewel or their Osco or their Piggly Wiggly or whatever they got in their town and reach into the meat locker section and find out that some cuts are going to be $12 to $15 to $16 a pound, some of the higher grade meats? And do you suppose at that point there will be a wailing out of mid-America that might backlash somewhat onto the ethanol industry?
I would say that, yeah, that's certainly the case, but Mrs. Rural Illinoisan is going to have to get in her car that's going to be fueled by ethanol to get there. So that's a good thing. She's not going to quit driving, and she's not going to quit eating. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I do think that that's going to be an issue. We are used to having very inexpensive food. I was also used to having very inexpensive electricity. And guess what, folks?
Yeah.
I sure found out this week I don't have that anymore.
Are there questions for our panel? Oh, there are several. Yes, sir?
Yeah,
The question is, what if we have a hiccup and corn prices go much higher and Randall's hedging effort gets done and now he's got to get new corn to keep the plant going, and he puts the pencil to the paper and finds out that corn prices are above $5. We established where the break point was. The question is, what would a local ethanol plant do in terms of running at a loss? What kind of plans, what's being discussed? Would they go 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off? How would it work? Randall, have you talked about that at your operation at all?
Well, we have. The first thing you're really committed to do, you got to fulfill your contracts out there. And if you don't, when everything returns back to as normal as it could be, then you're going to have trouble getting your marketers back. I know some plants that closed down in 1996 up in Minnesota. They sold their corn, just closed the plant down, and didn't fulfill their marketing contracts on DDG and ethanol, and they had a tough time getting their markets back. Well, it's been discussed as you fill those contracts, then you start idling that plant back. You maybe only run at 50% capacity, maybe a 40% capacity. Just minimize your losses as much as possible and hope your risk management was in place to offset a lot of that. And I know there is plants out there operating with a lot of debt, but there's a lot of plants out there that looked to the future and they took care of their debt problem early on and they're positioned very well.
Yes, sir. The question is, does it make any sense to promote E85 blended fuel when we might not have, when we might, at least in the short term, the next couple of years, have problems producing enough ethanol to blend E10 fuel? Mary?
I was going to let Randall.
Oh, Randall's going to do that one.
In my opinion, we should not be promoting E85 until we get vehicles that will not take a hit on mileage. Promote E10. If we do that nationwide, there's a heck of a market out there for us. We'd probably be looking at close to 15 billion gallon just at an E10 rate. But I agree with you. I don't think we should push E85 that hard. It's the good thing, the fuzzy feeling makes people happy that, you know, we've got it out there, but it's not economical.
Randall, what is the trade-off of gas to ethanol in the vehicle? Do you know?
On an E10, there's not no hit.
But an E85, what's the hit there?
Probably
do you know?
Close to 20%.
Questions? Yes, sir.
When it says we get up to 10% ethanol in our on the gas pump, it says up to. What do we get? Is it up to the company to put 2%, 4%, or how do we do that?
Individual companies, they blend at a different rate. If oil companies, if oil's high, ethanol's cheap, they're going to put the full 10% in there because they can take advantage of that 51 cents a gallon tax credit. So you don't know, but it's going to be somewhere between probably 7 and 10%.
Yes, sir.
Are the rail systems going to be able to keep up with the plants that are proposed to build? Is that a big problem?
What about transportation, Mary? As all these plants continue to go online and we're trying to get ethanol to places that want it, California comes to mind. Is there going to be enough rail? Is the infrastructure there to support the run-up in ethanol plant production?
I certainly do think that that can be an issue in terms of the rail and the capacity for that. You know, the trucking industry is certainly, you know, in there taking care of things as well. But I'm also starting to read different articles and different thoughts about whether or not we really can put ethanol through pipeline. And I think that, you know, that will probably come to pass. But what do you think, Randall?
I was out in Tucson last week at the Renewable Fuel Conference, and rail transportation is was really talked about. There is a concern, and it is going to have to be upgraded to handle the distiller's grain, the ethanol, in the future.
And maybe even a bigger immediate concern is, where is this ethanol going, period? We know that about 2 billion gallons of ethanol are going to head to the south. We're pretty sure about that. That still leaves, roughly speaking, about 4 billion gallons of unspoken-for ethanol to be figured out where it's shipped to. Now, is it going to go on rail? Is it going to go to California? Is it going to go on barges somewhere? And this is creating a problem for the transportation industry, because they don't know how to book their transportation. Yes?
Well, all of the above. There is ethanol being loaded on barges, taken to the Gulf, and shipped to California versus going on rail. Mm-hmm. Most of where we are from, our ethanol goes to the southeast and to the east. The southeast, Atlanta is a huge market that's going to open up. Florida is a huge market that's going to open up. One major oil company, Marathon Oil Company, they have announced, and they are committed to putting in blending racks at all their terminals in the southeast. So they are on board to do this. And oil companies like ethanol. They say they don't, but they like it, especially when they get that 51 cents a gallon.
Yes, sir. Efficiency of plants. What if a plant was required to use the alcohol it produces to run the plant? How much ethanol might be available for sale?
You're going to have to ask somebody a lot smarter than me, but there is plants out here that is set up. If natural gas gets too high, that you can use your dry distiller's grain as energy to run the plant. And there is one plant up in Minnesota that is actually using the syrup, which increases the efficiency, and they're burning their syrup in their boilers to produce the energy they need to operate the plant.
I'm looking at an article that just makes me want to dream a bit. We talked a little bit about the biodiesel and how in Illinois we're just scratching the surface of it. There is a plant running up in Joliet. In that same area, there are a number of ethanol plants up and running as well. Have you found that at this point, or might this become the vision someday, where the ethanol plants and the biodiesel plants are going to be in competition with one another for what the farmer will plant?
I think we're there.
You think you're there
partially
already?
There right now.
Bill, you have a question. Are we there now?
Well, we're obviously struggling. I mean, we obviously have to buy these corn acres to build these ethanol plants. So we're.
But I'm talking more of a basis side issue. I should have prefaced my remark with basis. Will it impact basis, do you suppose?
Well, I think it would.
Yeah, Bill.
You had mentioned the 51-cent credit, lending credit.
Yes.
$0.51 credit on ethanol production. Does it sunset? What's its possibilities down the road?
The ethanol tariff was extended to 2009, and that's really key. Just if you think about that, if we got rid of that 54-cent gallon tariff, What we would essentially be doing would we would be allowing ethanol to be imported into the United States from Brazil, and they would actually be receiving that benefit from our taxpayers. So I don't really see that happening. And that 51 cents does go to the blenders, and I think there's a lot of confusion about that, with renewable energy being on the forefront and on the minds of all the politicians. You know, I would say that it's there for a while.
Time for a question or two. There's a hand there, and there's a hand there. Yes, sir.
Ethanol's octane is 113. The oil companies use ethanol to blend their lower grades. They use it as a blending stock to increase their octane. But ethanol's octane is 113.
A hand here I thought I saw. He says he saw an article that you could take maybe DDGs and add enzymes to them and process ethanol out of the DDG, and he's wondering a little bit about that.
I'm not aware of it. I'm sure there's new technology coming along, but I can't believe you could get that much more ethanol out of your DDG. I don't know, but that's something I've not heard of yet.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that either, but I am a little bit surprised that nobody in the crowd's asked the DDG question.
Mary, answer the DDG question.
Answer it? I think one of the things that I'm pretty excited about is I think that there's a lot of other additional opportunities that some of us are starting to think about, some people are actually working on, some people are thinking about really hard. But I think that what we're going to see is things that we haven't even really begun to think about in terms of some of the spinoffs that are going to come about as a result of these ethanol facilities. I know there are several exciting things going on in terms of what we could do to further process the DDGs, and I look for that to be really exciting.
That's Mary Holmes. She is president of Alpha Energy Consulting Group out of Augusta and Agribusiness Solutions out of Peoria, where she serves as relationship manager, and Randall Matheny, treasurer of Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois. Give these people a hand, please.
I think they've done good.